When asked about life after the White House, President Clinton said, "I'll be lost for the first 3 or 4 months. When I walk into a room, nobody will play a song anymore." Each Tuesday this month, a Morning Edition NPR special correspondent Susan Stamberg is talking to presidential biographers and others about what it's like for presidents leaving the White House. Today, Susan talks with a man who's written about the lives of Theodore Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan.
Edmund Morris won the Pulitzer Prize for his 1980 biography of T.R., and he got the Heat for Dutch, his 1999 authorized biography of Reagan. Heat because Morris imagined himself as a character in various scenes, rather than offering historic truths. He said it was because he found Ronald Reagan unfathomable. Now Edmund Morris is working on the second volume of his Roosevelt biography, due out in the fall. So, two White House exits he studied, two Republicans, but politics aside, Edmund Morris sees parallels between Bill Clinton and Theodore Roosevelt's departures from the White House.
The intense physical dynamism, the youth, the love of power, the love of seducing people, the enjoyment of power. Unlike Theodore Roosevelt, who had a rich intellectual life, a love of reading and a love of knowledge and many skills, the difference between these two men, I think, is that Clinton's mind is entirely political. So I would imagine that he's going to chafe much more than Theodore Roosevelt did.
Theodore Roosevelt was our 26th president, vigorous, macho, a trust buster, conservationist, Panama Canal crusader, just 50 when he left office in 1909.
He's the only president I'm aware of, with the single exception of Ronald Reagan, who was very happy to leave. He was in full possession of all his faculties. He could have had a third term on a silver plate if he'd wanted it, but he turned it down in 1908 because he believed that power should be given back to the people, promptly. So he left with a definite plan and very much looking forward to what he was going to do. He had a big safari mounted to East Africa, and he spent most of the next year, 1909 and 1910, in Africa, collecting specimens. But like all men of power, Theodore Roosevelt himself intensely regretted giving it up once he had given it up, chafed to be back in the United States, and T.R. was obliged to form a new party, the Progressive Party, and he launched a third party candidacy in 1912, which split the vote and elected Woodrow Wilson, the Democrat.
In that period when he was running on the Progressive ticket, there was an assassination attempt.
Theodore Roosevelt was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he was coming out of a hotel en route to a public address in a field outside of town. And this young, pale, podgy person emerged from the crowd, popped off a series of shots. The bullet hit T.R. in the chest, fortunately impacted on his spectacle case and the folded copy of the speech that he had in his pocket, which sort of slowed the bullet and stopped it 1/4 inch from his heart. Being a macho, Bull Moose, as he called himself, he went on and completed his political address outside of the city. Nobody in the audience realized he'd been shot, except when he got to the climax of his speech, reported the fact that he'd been shot, opened his jacket and exposed his bloody shirt front and said, "It takes more than that to kill a Bull Moose."
Good heavens. And it did. Uncanny connections and parallels with the shooting of Ronald Reagan, another Republican, served two terms, except the assassination attempt with Reagan happened a handful of days after he took office. Less than 70 days.
Yes, indeed. The end of March, 1981.
Yeah.
Same circumstances, a limousine, a hotel, a sidewalk, a pale blonde young man coming out and popping off shots. The same arrival at hospital, gushing blood. The same insistence on walking in without help. The same jokes on the operating table. Mm. The same sweetness of character. The same unbelievable courage. The parallels are quite amazing, except that Reagan was president when this happened.
And stayed president for many years after, and that shooting took a toll on him, which we only learned about after he'd left office. You had unprecedented access to the White House as his authorized biographer during his term. You were able to go in almost at any time you wanted and be there observing anything that was going on. So were you there in those last days as Ronald Reagan prepared to leave the White House?
Oh, indeed. I was there in the White House as it was literally disbanding in front of my eyes when the motorcade was forming and Reagan was about to go off and hand over power to Vice President Bush. What I did do, though, instead of following him to the Capitol, I went to Andrews Air Force Base because I wanted to see him come back from the Capitol as the former president and get on the plane and fly to California. I wanted to see Reagan leave Washington. So I was there waiting for him when he helicoptered into Andrews Air Force Base. This former president of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, suddenly become ordinary again. And I saw him step down onto the tarmac. It was a windy morning. Conduct his last Guard of Honor inspection, step onto the plane, which was no longer Air Force One, it was now just an anonymous Air Force plane, and wave goodbye to the crowd. And he looked suddenly old and deflated and ordinary. The particularly poignant detail was that there was only one member of his cabinet bothered to show up, John Harrington, the Secretary of Energy. Everybody else, they were all off at the Capitol, hanging out with the new crowd. Ronald Reagan had already become passé within 20 minutes of handing over power.
Incredible. Incredible scene.
I think this is the single most dramatic thing about the power that we give our presidents, is how quickly it's taken away. How, in the flash of a heartbeat, the most powerful man in the world becomes just another ordinary citizen.
Edmund Morris. His 1999 biography of Ronald Reagan is called Dutch. Before that, in 1980, he wrote The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt. Volume 2, scheduled for September, is called Theodore Rex. Edmund Morris works on it in his D.C. office, surrounded by a calendar for 1906, the biography his wife wrote about Edith Kermit Roosevelt, and the collected poems of Edwin Arlington Robinson. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News, Washington.